Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we focus on an organization that for many people flies under the radar, but which plays a significant role in the economy of North Central Wisconsin. The Rural Development Program of the U.S. Department of Agriculture funneled $558 million, more than a half a billion dollars, into our state last year in job creation, alternative energy development, regional food systems, and building and maintaining water, sewer, electric, telephone, and broadband infrastructure. And just yesterday, the organization announced $380,000 in loan money to a Central Wisconsin Social Service and Economic Development Agency. CAP Services of Stevens Point plans to use the money to create an estimated 19 jobs by providing loans to entrepreneurs and startup businesses and to help existing ones expand. My guest today, joining us by telephone, Stan Grzynski. He's Wisconsin Rural Development State Director. Here in our studio, we have Brian Diener, the Wisconsin Rural Development Program Director, and Mary Patoka, the President and CEO of CAP Services of Stevens Point. This year marks the 150th anniversary of the founding of what was known at the time as the People's Department, for it was in 1862 that President Abraham Lincoln signed into law an act of Congress establishing the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The USDA, through its Rural Development Program, is still making a significant impact today. If you'd like to join the conversation, we ask that you do that. Dial 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And it is always easier to fit you into the conversation the earlier you call. Stan Grzynski, thanks for joining us. And here in our studio, Brian Diener and Mary Patoka.
Thank you for having us.
Glenn, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting us to be part of your program.
Well, Stan, 150 years is quite an anniversary for the Department of Agriculture. Our country has gone through a lot of changes since Abraham Lincoln signed that measure into law, yet the USDA is still playing an important role in America's economy.
Well, there's no question about that, Glenn. I mean, few people realize that most of the money that comes from the federal government for infrastructure and housing and community facilities and business startups and support comes through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Traditionally, we've always been pretty much below the radar in terms of that sort of awareness, but it's good to be able to talk about these things because without this sort of investment in rural communities, we don't have the opportunities to move forward that good sound infrastructure gives us.
Give us an overview, Stan, of the Rural Development Program. Let us know something about its history and how it fits in with the mission of the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Well, actually, it was created in 1949, and it was called the Farmers Home Administration at that point, and it included both farm programs as well as infrastructure and housing and business development. Then in the 90s, they split the agencies, and the Farm Services Agency takes care of and works with farmers and commodity producers in the agricultural sector. Natural Resources Conservation works with the land and land preservation and protection of wetlands and those sorts of things. And then Rural Development manages infrastructure, business development, and housing. And those are the areas that are still our chief program areas today. And like you mentioned, last year was roughly a half a billion dollars. 2 years ago, with the ARRA funding, which significantly increased in Wisconsin, it was closer to $1 billion. I think we wound up somewhere in the area of 800 and some million dollars.
Well, about a billion and a half. That's a lot of money, and it was all channeled into Wisconsin's economy over the past 2 years. Do you think it was well spent?
Well, there's no question about it. I mean, if you mean by well spent, were the services needed? Absolutely. Whenever you have a waste treatment facility, for example, that's not just built because someone wants to have it. It's needed because communities can't afford it on their own. They need financial support to make it happen. They've got to meet state health standards. And so if the water supply is contaminated, their existing water supply, they need new water. Rural development comes in. Usually it's a loan-grant combination depending on the demographics and how much they can afford in that community, and we help them build that plant in put it in operation. The same applies with waste and sewage treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you take a look at the best measure, I really think, is to take a look at the default rate. And the fact of the matter is, Wisconsin leads the nation in terms of return on those investments, both in terms of how they make an impact, but also in terms of money that you would consider not well spent. And we, frankly, overall, do better than the private sector.
So the money was not only spent, it was returned.
That's right.
Brian Diener is the Wisconsin Rural Development's Community Programs Director. Give us just a quick overview, maybe a few bullet points, of how some of that money is making a difference in north central Wisconsin. I don't want you to go into a lot of details, but just kind of an overview of some of the projects that it's funding.
Well, I can give a real good example. Just down the street here in Mosinee, they recognized the need to study their wastewater treatment plant that was built in the 1970s. And in 2008, they were studying the need to upgrade that plant, and determined that it was more cost effective to transfer their wastewater to Rib Mountain, to the Rib Mountain Metropolitan Sewerage District. And
right.
We provided them some loan and grant funding to be able to do that.
Why can't local taxpayers just take care of that? Why do they have to go through this government program?
Well, I think the need to keep the user charge at an affordable rate so that the city of Mosinee is not paying rates much higher than the surrounding communities, keep them on an even keel and an even scale, our funding allows them to do that.
Well, it helps them out during some real tough economic times, too, when local tax revenues are down, just like revenues everywhere are down.
Absolutely.
Mary Patoka, speaking of money, you and the folks at CAP Services in Stevens Point must be thrilled to have been awarded that $380,000 loan.
Yes, absolutely. The USDA has been a great partner with CAP Services over a number of years, and this is just another example where, you know, they're willing to invest in CAP, and in turn CAP helping those small businesses mm-hmm. get started or expand. So we're thrilled about it, of course. Access to capital and credit is still very, very difficult for especially startup businesses or low-income individuals who
right.
we try to serve. Conventional bankers are still shy and unwilling to take some of the risks that may come with some of those that we work with.
Well, what does CAP stand for?
Well, we stand for a lot of stuff. It's the name itself is not an acronym. We're a community action agency, though we're 46 years old, so
I'm not nearly as old as Stan. I always thought the CA was community action. I could never figure out what the P was.
Well, a lot of we're one of 16 community action agencies in the state and about 1,000 in the nation, but it's part of our brand. You see CAP in the name of many of these. We're born in the War on Poverty, and
mm-hmm.
our charge
part of the Great Society.
Part of the Great Society, and so our charge is to look for local solutions to and poverty. And so what we do might look different than what a CAP in Milwaukee might do or a CAP in Florida might do, but certainly we see helping businesses get started and grow can lead to economic self-sufficiency for that business owner, their employees, and then, you know, the ripple effect is the mm-hmm. benefits to the community.
Well, give me a specific example of some of the things, you know, just highlight something that kind of would show people in a specific sense what kinds of projects you're involved with.
Do you mean on the business side or just in general?
Just in general.
Oh, well, we run about 30 programs, and so it's kind of hard to pick one. But our four main areas of focus are affordable and decent housing. And so we help people buy houses, rehab houses. We help weatherize them so people keep more of their energy resources in their pocket. We have a whole department dedicated to early childhood development, Head Start.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, our business development program, and then finally, what we consider our human services wing, domestic violence, sexual assault, family resource centers, those kinds of things.
Well, let's focus on that loan. Here is the joint announcement that was made yesterday by USDA Rural Development Undersecretary Dallas Tonsager and Stan Grzynski as they spoke to reporters.
Today, I'm pleased to join Wisconsin Rural Development State Director Stan Grzynski to announce that CAP Services, Inc. has been selected to receive a $380,000 loan under our Intermediary Relending Program, or IRP. CAP Services, Inc. has been on the front line of the war on poverty since 1966. Its headquarters is in Stephen Point, and it serves five counties. CAP Services will use the IRP funding to establish a revolving loan fund that will focus on job creation, business development, and business growth in rural Wisconsin. CAP will use the IRP loan to leverage additional funds for rural entrepreneurs. The impact of these funds, loan funds on job creation should be significant. The loan is expected to help create or retain an estimated 19 full-time jobs for low and moderate income individuals, and significantly more as loan funds are repaid.
CAP Services, as Dallas indicated, has been around since 1966. I think most of the folks know that. We've got a strong reputation for working in partnership and developing capacity with other organizations that are concerned about the underserved populations in central and east and west central Wisconsin. This will go a long way in terms of their continuing to do the kind of work that they're doing. I've always admired them well before I had this job, for their ability to not only serve the underserved, but really make a significant contribution to diversified business and economic development in central Wisconsin. They've always had strong leadership, both on their board and with their executive directors. I know that they'll use this money very wisely, and it's a timely announcement because, as everyone knows, lenders are a little bit more nervous today than they were a few years back about lending money, and especially for small business startups and those sorts of things. So having CAP Services with their strong reputation and know-how involved and able to leverage, this is going to make a significant difference, and I know they feel that way too.
And that last voice you hear is Stan Grzynski, who's with us on Route 51 today. Stan, anything you'd like to add to those comments?
Well, I would like to thank CAP Services for their work over the years. They really have made a difference in terms of creating jobs and developing and supporting small business. This is not an easy task. Economies change, livelihoods change, and it's not just a matter of making big business succeed. You have to ensure that small business, which many consider, and I certainly support it, really the backbone of our economy. And CAP Services has worked over the years to ensure that local banks and small business investors and small business owners themselves can succeed. And that's a very important contribution, especially during these times.
Mary Patoka, how competitive is it to get this loan money? Your agency certainly wasn't the only one that could use it.
It gets more and more competitive all the time. I mean, as resources get thinner and demand grows, there are more and more agencies, I think, that are looking at how they can create this kind of capacity in their own area. So I'm not sure in terms of the specific competition this time around, but you can't assume you're going to get it just because you've applied.
Well, what did you tell them in your application?
Well, we said we had a great track record to start with. That didn't hurt. But certainly the need is justified. When we look at our primary service area in central Wisconsin, we have a higher percentage than state average of poverty wage jobs, mm-hmm. those entry-level kinds of jobs that may not offer a lot of opportunities for promotion or growth, but also a below state average median household income. And so sometimes the answer for people is to start a business. And, there are some people who will say, don't take a job, make a job. And for those with that entrepreneurial spirit, we want to be there to support them.
Well, with a lot of people who are out of work, too, who lose their jobs if they're working in a factory or working maybe even in a white-collar position, sometimes your only option is to start your own business.
Yeah, exactly, to start thinking about what your skill sets are and where they may take you.
Stan Grzynski just said, banks are kind of stingy with their money these days.
Well, you know, they've just, I think, grown a little risk-averse. And I have to say, too, though, that there is a little bit of a difference. You know, our community banks, our local credit unions, you know, I think they, because many of those decisions about lending are made locally,
right,
they're comfortable making maybe some riskier loans. Some of the other conventional lenders where decisions are made outside the area, they don't know about the family that did this, that, or the other thing, or what that community might really need. So I'm not suggesting the big banks aren't players, but certainly the community banks and credit unions are partnering up, and that's our goal with this money, is if a new business needs money to get their operation going, we certainly try to hook them up with a bank and use this as part of the financing if at all possible. So they have that connection to a lender in the long run.
Well, 19 jobs is a very specific figure. How do you come up with it, and how are you going to create them?
Well, part of it is by design of the program. The suggested loan amount when we redeploy these funds is about $20,000 per job created. So we are.
So you have a track record, and you can use that as kind of a benchmark for what this seed money will be able to accomplish.
That's what we're looking for. And sometimes that job creation, when we're starting with a business, might be over a 2 or 3 year period. So we're tracking, and we continue to provide some technical assistance to our businesses. So, you know, if they need some help down the road, whether it's in HR or accounting or something like that, we try to hook them up with the appropriate resources so they have everything they need to succeed.
Do you know some of the places where the money is going to be spent yet, or are you waiting for business owners and would-be entrepreneurs to come to you at this point?
Oh, we always have possibilities in the pipeline. And, you know, businesses, I think, or startups are much like a funnel. Everybody's got a great idea, but sometimes people don't really understand that, you know, this isn't going to be a part-time job. It'll
right.
probably be a 6-7 day a week job. And so part of what our business development staff is really sit down with people and look at their business plan. Are they realistic with their forecasting? What kind of financial resources do they need for working capital? And so that funnel, the number of people who walk through the door and the number who start, obviously it gets to be a smaller number.
You ever talk somebody out of a business idea when they come in your door? And
it's happened. It's happened. In fact, just this summer, I think we had a couple of individuals come who wanted to start a daycare center. And when we started going through their projections, you know, they needed to serve more kids than they would have been licensed for. And when they looked at the licensing issues, they just weren't sure that they could pull it off. So they said, well, maybe we'll do this, but not now. So in the end, it was probably the best for them because they would have probably not made enough money to cover their expenses.
Brian, comment, if you could, on this loan and what it and CAP Services has meant for the economy of central Wisconsin.
Well, a tremendous amount. You know, our charge is to improve the lives of rural residents throughout the state and throughout the country. And as you can see, any job that's created in this environment is certainly going to be a spin effect in what, you know, we can have to offer.
That's Brian Diener. He is the Wisconsin Rural Development Program Director. We also have Stan Grzynski, the Wisconsin Rural Development State Director, and Mary Patoka, President and CEO of CAP Services of Stevens Point, which just got a $380,000 loan from the USDA Rural Development Program. 19 jobs, maybe more, will be created according to their projections. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. If you'd like to join the conversation, our lines are wide open, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the United States Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Program, which funneled $1.5 billion in economic assistance money, largely through loans and grants, to the Wisconsin economy over the past 2 years. Most recently, a $380,000 loan to CAP Services of Stevens Point. 19 jobs are going to be created. This agency is involved with building infrastructure, broadband, alternative energy, developing local food systems, working with the tribes, sewer, water, all kinds of different things. And as Stan Grzynski said, well, it was actually Mary, but I'm sure Stan wouldn't disagree. It was really a creation, CAP Services was anyway, the Community Action Agencies of the War on Poverty. and the Great Society. If you'd like to join the conversation, again, our lines are wide open, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Stan Grzynski, there's a train of thought in this country that the U.S. government shouldn't be spending any money for rural development or economic stimulus in Wisconsin or any other state, that our country, which is burdened by debt, that we can't afford the $558 million that came into the state last year through the Rural Development Program. We ought to just step back completely, let the free market take care of itself. How do you answer folks, and there are a lot of them, with that point of view?
Well, I really don't think that the government should ever waste money. These are tax dollars. They're entrusted to the government to be spent wisely. But to suggest that we can survive in this kind of a worldwide economy without the support of government investment and support in rural communities like we have in Wisconsin is just foolishness. The fact of the matter is we've had a history as a nation of the federal government stepping in and getting involved when we needed to level the playing field, whether it's rural electrification a number of years ago when my parents were children, or the kinds of things that we did to rebuild the economy after the Second World War, or the money that was spent to ensure that young people who were capable and eligible and would use the education wisely could borrow money or get a grant to go to college, like is the case in my family. I was the first in our family to have that opportunity. So I really think that there's a place for the federal government's investment. I think it's wise to ensure that we develop a kind of a level playing field in terms of opportunity. While there's a lot that the private sector can do, the fact of the matter is, in many cases, the private sector does not want to get involved because there's no profit. You know, they're in it, you know, to make money, not to lose money. A good example is broadband in the nation. It's easy to provide broadband in very metropolitan areas, but it's not very cost efficient for big corporations to invest in broadband in far reach and the far reach of rural communities, which is why both President Obama and Secretary Vilsack have made it a priority that there be federal funding to ensure that there's broadband and telecommunications facilities and capacities and capabilities in rural communities.
You know, Stan, you can go back to the 50s and the construction of the interstate highway system. Corporations and businesses couldn't have done that by themselves, but the federal government did it, had to do it in order to provide high-speed links between our major cities. And look at what that has done now for all of these businesses, which have reaped the benefits, even though they did not build the interstate highway system.
You're right, Glenn. There's no doubt about that. And the same sort of thing exists today, or at least the same concept when you talk about the communications highways. I mean, it's important that a small business in Ashland, Wisconsin, where I was visiting early this week, or businesses in Chippewa Valley, in the Chippewa Valley, where I was last week, and that they have internet access. In both those cases, the number one concern for small business development, aside from the need for capital and banks willing to lend money, was the assurance that there would be adequate internet service so that they could compete worldwide. And you're simply not going to get those sorts of investments at this time from private sector companies because it's not cost efficient for them to do it. So the federal government needs to be involved with state government and partner with the private sector so we can ensure that businesses can grow and develop in Wisconsin.
And for those who think that this is really a kind of a post-war or a post-depression phenomenon, you can go back to the Civil War. As we said, Abraham Lincoln started the United States Department of Agriculture, which now operates the Rural Development Program. It's doubtful that we would have had an intercontinental railway system without the active role of the federal government in helping these railroads acquire the land and the easements and everything else that led to its construction. So, you know, there's a historically, there is a long history of in America of the government helping to spur economic development and working hand in hand with businesses.
Well, absolutely, and it's what, that's why we consider ourselves a commonwealth, because there are things that responsibilities that we hold in common. without adequate transportation systems, communication systems, electrical systems, without those sorts of things in place, held in common by the American people, we cannot expect to grow and prosper. So you're right. It began with Reconstruction after the Civil War, the railroads, and all along the way, whenever the economy took a downturn or we had to deal with a national disaster of some sort or other, it's been the federal government that has stepped in with the support of the general population to get the country back on track and make Americans prosperous and give opportunity for people to become proper.
And as long as we're talking about history, you know, if you're a strict constructionist and you want to go back to the Constitution, the U.S. Post Office is in the Constitution of the United States. You know, federal delivery of mail is in the Constitution. So it goes back to the very roots of this country.
You're right.
And I would just add, I know we're talking about infrastructure for the whole country, but I think many of the USDA programs not only bring that capacity to many parts of our nation, but many of their products also focus on low-income people who otherwise wouldn't have access. I mean, Brian just talked about Mozini. Those user charges affect everybody, but when you're on a limited income, the user charges have a much more impactful they're much more impactful on a family's household budget.
2,000 jobs, helping 2,900 families own their own homes, assisting more than 200 communities in improving facilities and upgrading local infrastructure. That's what's in the pamphlet I got from your organization, Stan Grzynski. That's how that money has been used in Wisconsin.
Well, particularly in the area of community programming, which is what Brian directs, but you're talking fire stations, municipal buildings, community meeting areas, libraries, even shared kitchen facilities so that local producers on a small scale can use these facilities to process vegetables or fruits or otherwise to develop small businesses in their homes. And at first you think, well, yeah, but what difference does that really make? Well, you only have to travel to some of the outlying areas of Wisconsin, particularly the Southwest, and you realize that diversified economy is what is happening in this area of the state. And when people come together and work together and invest together and we get some federal support for that through these loan and grant dollars, we can really make changes to the local economy, and those changes are very positive. The housing market, as everyone knows, is what contributed in large part to the downturn that we're now beginning to climb out of. So the work we do to ensure that people have access to safe, affordable housing, and the support that we give to private lending institutions, banks, savings and loans, and other banks and credit unions, and otherwise, you know, are a good indication of how the federal government can come in without it being a very large cost, if any, to taxpayers, and take some of the risk away for the banks by guaranteeing that if that's a sound borrower with a good income, even though they might otherwise be considered risky, we will help them get into a home, which helps the economy, helps realtors, helps builders, and otherwise.
City of Abbotsford, a few years ago, in fact, they've been plagued with this throughout in that region of central Wisconsin. They had an inadequate water supply. Now, in 2007, there was a large industrial customer that wanted to expand, but they wanted 350,000 gallons per day. The water table might not have been able to handle it. Your information suggests that rural development found a reliable source for that groundwater, 12 new wells spread out over multiple parcels, a treatment plant, and, Brian, that kept 680 jobs in the area.
Yes, it did, and I won't say that rural development found that water. I think their engineering firms and all the studies that were done out there identified that source, and we did provide the financing then to install those wells to get that water to not only the residential customers, but this very important user in that community.
And Abbotsford was strapped. I remember they were looking at building a pipeline to Wausau at one point in time, which, you know, who knows what that would have cost. So How exactly did this go about, that rural development got involved with this program that saved 680 jobs in Abbotsford?
Well, actually, quite honestly, the water program that we talk about, we mentioned the 150-year anniversary of USDA. These programs date back 75 years. And 75 years is 1937, just after the Dust Bowl era, and Congress identified the need to protect safe and affordable drinking water. And they enacted legislation now that has stood the test of time, and we continue to use these programs to fund safe, affordable drinking water in many rural communities in Wisconsin.
Now, we've already talked about, Brian, the regional wastewater treatment project that's connecting Mozenie to Rib Mountain, but all across central Wisconsin, we've got wastewater treatment facilities that have new discharge limits for phosphorus, a real hot topic for municipal utilities. Meeting those new standards could cost local governments hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of dollars.
Yeah, I noticed it just recently. It's the dog days of summer. You drive around and you look at our waterways, you look at our rivers and our lakes, and you see that algae bloom, you see that green color to the lakes, and obviously DNR has identified the need to protect that resource and has imposed stricter limits on the discharge that these municipal wastewater utilities are going to be able to discharge to these water systems.
Well, we had a huge fish kill in the Eau Plaine flowage just a couple of years ago, largely complicated by the phosphorus that had run off of farm fields.
And there's some absolute need for investments in these wastewater utilities and substantial investments, and that's where our programs can come in to reduce the impact on back to the user charge once those are completed.
Mary, I want to talk about one very significant project that CAP Services was involved in a few years back in the city of Wautoma. You cleaned up a brownfield site. You built a subdivision on that site of very nice but very affordable homes for low-income people, many of them with developmental disabilities, and this new subdivision of these nice homes on this former contaminated site was within walking distance of a factory where many of these people could get gainful employment and a big boost in self-reliance and self-esteem.
That's right. The mayor at the time, Lester Loon, if I'm remembering correctly.
That is his name.
contacted my predecessor, Carl Panasek, and said, you know, what are we going to do about this? It was known as the Defoe site. It was the former high school, but they found contamination. And while they had hopes of, you know, doing some development, nobody wanted to touch it with a 10-foot pole. And so we, with a number of resources, were able to get the funding to clean up the site and create the housing there. There's one or two houses that were built by Habitat. We run a program where high school dropouts build a home and work on their GED. There's a program like it here in Wausau called Fresh Start. They built a few of the homes. But yes, it's a beautiful, beautiful site. And Cummins was the manufacturing firm that was just within blocks. But it's, you know, Wautoma's not that big a city, so walking distance to human services, walking distance to the grocery store. So it's a wonderful, wonderful location.
And what I really dug about this was it's one solution that solved many problems all in that same area.
Yes, yes. And the community rallied. I mean, there were many people invested in seeing results, and so everybody was really working with their eyes on the prize.
We're talking about CAP Services of Stevens Point with Mary Patoka, the CEO and president of that organization. Also, we've got Stan Grzynski, who is the Wisconsin Director of Rural Development, and Brian Diener, who is their community program manager. And we're talking about rural development agency. It's an agency of the U.S. Department of Agriculture that has funneled $1.5 billion or thereabouts into the Wisconsin economy in the last 2 years. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're talking about the U.S. Department of Agriculture Rural Development Program with its Wisconsin Director, Stan Grzynski, its Program Manager, Brian Diener, and also CAP Services CEO, Mary Patoka, who has gotten a grant, not a grant, but a loan guarantee of $380,000, which will be used to create an estimated 19 jobs in central Wisconsin. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's talk about tribal projects. Stan and Brian, this organization of yours works with Wisconsin's tribes and to some good effect.
Well, the tribes, for the most part, are eligible for any of the programs that are offered by USDA. It's a little different. There are a little different circumstances because the tribes are sovereign. And so it's more of a government-to-government relationship with them. But, yes, they are, in many cases, eligible as an underserved population. They have the opportunity to apply for funding as any other rural community in Wisconsin would have. And we've done quite a bit in conjunction with the tribes to support the infrastructure, building businesses in tribal communities, ensuring that the water and waste systems that they have are safe and adequate, and working where we can with housing for tribal members, particularly multifamily housing or elderly housing. So we've had over the years good working relationships, and the results are very admirable. I mean, we have situations where we've helped to decrease the unemployment rates. We've helped with the startup of new business in the tribal communities, and we're actually now looking for ways where we can kind of reach out to surrounding communities and work in collaboration between tribal interests and larger community interests. And Brian can talk a little bit about something that has just occurred over on the western part of the state.
Well, we had a very successful opportunity with the tribal organization and a local unit of government that both needed to install some wastewater and water utilities to protect the vital resources which were there located at the headwaters of the St. Croix River. And those two organizations, as I understand, are the first in the nation that combine a tribal organization and a local unit of government to come together and build a central system for both their water and wastewater needs that serves that entire region.
According to my notes, that's the Danbury Sanitary District and the St. Croix Chippewa Indians?
That's correct.
How difficult was it to bring together an Indian nation and a sanitary district to improve water quality?
It was a career opportunity for a lot of people in our agency, quite honestly.
Challenges are opportunities, I know.
I've been around in this program for about 15 years, and I know at least half of that this project was in the developmental stages. And just recently, actually just a couple weeks ago, we were up there for the open house and finally seeing that project fully online and fully functional, and a very happy group of people in that area.
You had a lot of different people involved. Of course, rural development, the state of Wisconsin was involved in this, the DNR, and Indian Health Services all coming together. Any other significant projects in tribal areas that stand out?
Well, I think the other area that we're very proud of is our investment in the tribal colleges that exist here in the state of Wisconsin. The Menominee, the College of Menominee Nation in Keshena started in the mid-1990s, and we've been able to invest every year in their expansion projects, classroom projects, new curriculum that they've developed, as well as our investment at the LCO Ojibwa Community College up in Lakota Ray. Similar type startup organization. They've received funding from Rural Development to develop their educational facility, and they we're proud of that partnership.
A couple of other things I could mention, Glenn, would be the Bad River Tribe. They're very interested in local foods. We're supporting that on Lac de Flambeau. We've worked to support their hatchery development and economic development of the downtown. So when we look at this, we see that we've actually made an impact and improved the lives not only of people on the reservations, but in surrounding communities.
Stan Grzynski, I understand you've got another appointment. You've got to leave us in a few minutes. Anything you'd like to add? Anything that you want us to focus on?
Well, we haven't focused on energy, which has really been an emphasis of Secretary Vilsack, who believes that rural development in particular, USDA overall, really has to become a part of solving the energy problems in this country through the use of biofuels and other alternative types of energy, including digesters that a lot of the big farms are going to as a way of not only dealing with waste, but also producing energy for themselves and selling some of that off. Now, people say, yes, but can you really make a difference? You know, we really need to, in the end, we'll be relying on fossil fuels. I want to share something with you that I learned earlier this year when I was over on the eastern part of the state. In Kewaunee County, for example, you have roughly 89 households, private households. If you combine all of the alternative energy sources, some of them we've supported, digesters, solar energy, wind energy, other ways of creating power other than fossil fuels, enough energy has been produced in Kewaunee County to power 8,000 of those households.
Wow.
So we're nearly there. So these sorts of things do have an impact. They're not always seen. They're not always very sexy in terms of the kinds of things that the media talks about. But in the final analysis, Wisconsin's in a great place to really contribute to the energy needs of this country through biofuels and ethanol and wind and solar. And we're pleased that we're able to help that and that Secretary Vilsack and President Obama are aware of the contribution the state can make.
And I understand here's a place that a lot of people in the area, in our listening area, are familiar with, Helene's Apple Orchard in Merrill. We understand that they've gotten some solar panels.
Well, they were part of a value-added grant that we were able to provide. Wisconsin leads the nation in getting federal dollars home, so to speak, through that program. We lead not only in the number of people that are awarded grants, but also in the number of dollars that Washington sends back. So we're proud of that. But that's an example of someone using USDA resources to expand their business, create jobs, conserve and produce energy, and overall set kind of a positive example for people living around them about the kinds of things that we can do to become more energy self-sufficient and to make a living.
Stan, we're going to let you go, but I want you to comment on one thing that you wrote. You wrote that the demographics of rural America are changing. The 2010 census showed that less than 16% of the American population is considered rural, with the remaining 84% highly dependent on the resources and production of rural Americans for their well-being.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, back actually when President Lincoln created the department, that statistic was almost the exact reverse. What that means is that two things. One, urban communities need to be aware of the fact that without the resources and productive capacity of rural communities, they won't have the jobs that they need, nor the manufacturing or production capacities. So we need their support, and the other way around is also true. And that's why it's critically important, in my opinion, that even in these tough political times, Congress come together in a bipartisan way to pass the Food, Farm, and Jobs Bill, because it is that program that supports infrastructure, business development, job creation, housing, and all the things that we've talked about today. And while there are many things that can be argued about politically, and I'm certainly game for an argument.
I know you are.
We're talking about people's livelihood when we talk about this bill, and I really hope Congress, when it goes back into session, will come together and pass this bill.
Stan Grzynski, Wisconsin Rural Development State Director. Stan, we're going to let you go. Thanks so much for helping us out today.
Glenn, thank you for the program. I appreciate it.
Also, Brian Diener, Wisconsin Rural Development Program Director. Mary Patoka, President and CEO of CAP Services of Stevens Point. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Going to take one last short break, and we'll be back to wrap things up.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I want to thank Stan Grzynski for joining us for the first part of this program, and we return now with Brian Diener, the Wisconsin Rural Development Program Director, and Mary Patoka, the President and CEO of CAP Services. So let's see what we've got on this laundry list, things that we haven't talked about yet. I don't think we've talked about healthcare facilities.
Yeah, obviously some of the community facility financing that we deploy in Wisconsin go to healthcare facilities. A lot of the community hospitals, the nursing homes that were established a lot under the Hal Burton Act back in the 1950s, some of those buildings are in need of replacement and repairs, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We have invested in the western part of Wisconsin in quite a few nursing homes that are going away from the institutional type settings that those facilities were built under, long, narrow hallways, cylinder block walls, that type of thing, to now more of a neighborhood setting where you have a nursing station in a central location with the patients and residents surrounding that nursing station. And it takes quite an investment into those facilities to get into that more neighborhood concept, neighborhood feeling and setting.
And that's so important for the quality of life of people who are at the last stages of life.
Absolutely.
I would add to that, the loan that we're getting from the USDA, we got another product earlier, and one of the businesses that we helped get start with some of those funds was a resident, it was a living, assisted living facility. And so one of our communities in Waupaca County now has a facility that wouldn't otherwise exist. There were other funds that obviously went into it, but it was using those dollars in a way to help those people who had aged out in their community the opportunity to stay in their community and not have to move away from family and friends when they couldn't stay in their own homes any longer.
And the funding for an elevator for Haven, which is Merrill's domestic violence shelter.
Again, another opportunity under community facility financing to, you know, address any essential need in these communities that is a need that is usually provided by the local unit of government. And domestic abuse shelters are certainly one of those areas that we have been involved with.
Many of us in the news business remember Edward R. Murrow's shocking expose of the conditions migrant laborers had to live under in the 50s with the documentary. I think it was called The Grapes of Wrath. You have helped with farm labor housing. Many migrant farmers say the nicest place they've ever lived with their family.
Yeah, and we're expanding on that opportunity. Another area that we get involved with is student housing down in Fenimore. We've provided financing for students down there, and obviously that housing assistance is needed during the winter months and early spring months, but they've developed a working relationship with UMOS to provide shelter for the migrant workers during the summer months when the students are not utilizing those facilities.
And let's talk about very quickly, because we're running out of time, but value-added grants for agricultural products. We understand that the notice of funding availability just went out today.
Just went out today, and those applications are due by October 15th.
And according to Tom Vilsack, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, the funds enable America's farmers, ranchers, and rural business owners to find ways to expand their product offerings, revenue streams, and create more economic opportunity by bringing additional value to what they already produce. Now, businesses of all sizes are encouraged to apply, but priority will be given to operators of small and medium-sized farms or ranches structured as family farms. Now, the family farm is disappearing from the Wisconsin landscape, and a lot of those folks could use some help.
And this is certainly our attempt to stabilize those revenues that exist at the local farm.
We are out of time. I want to thank both of you for joining us. The hour went very quickly. We want to thank Brian Diener, Wisconsin Rural Development Program Director, Mary Patoka, the President and CEO of CAP Services of Stevens Point, and Stan Grzynski, Wisconsin Rural Development State Director. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Crystal Waters. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Woody Guthrie. Next week on Route 51, we welcome the state of Wisconsin's Secretary of Agriculture, Ben Brancel. He is also the Secretary of Consumer Protection and Trade. Mr. Brancel will be in Wausau next Thursday to speak about global demand for Wisconsin's agricultural products and our strategic position in the global agricultural market. His appearance is sponsored by the Center-Right Coalition. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 p.m. on the Ideas Network stations WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau and 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, WHAA 89.1 FM Adams Wisconsin Rapids, and WHRM 90.9 FM High Definition Channel 3. A reminder, you can follow our adventures on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for riding along with us on Route 51 today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.
By fireball and rifle, a dozen or more, we won by the Mary and soldiers she bore. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Remember the trial when the battle was won. The wild Indian warriors to the tall timber run. We hung ever-ending with smoke in his gun. Roll on, Columbia, roll on.